Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I'm delighted to have you with me again today. As promised, I want to replay for you a broadcast that was done in December by Cara Santa Maria interviewing Dr. Jay Wenger of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Dr. Wenger is the director of polio eradication for the Gates Foundation. And the Gates Foundation is working in close partnership with the Rotary Foundation to try to eradicate polio. So this is not just ending new cases of polio, but making sure that we get rid of this virus from the planet Earth. And that's an enormous undertaking. They've been working on this with the foundation since 1988. And they're very close now. They've reduced 99.9% of all cases since 1988. But they still have the last mile to go. And I thought it was an excellent interview, so I'd like to play it for you in its entirety. I hope that you enjoy it. And again, many thanks to Cara Santa Maria of Talk Nerdy, and her guest, Dr. Jay Wenger, and to the Gates Foundation and to Rotary International for making this work possible. And thanks to everybody who supports the work. Don't forget that you can play a part as well. Go to www.endpolio.org. Thank you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. It's Monday, December 19th, and I'm your host, Cara Santa Maria. This is our last Talk Nerdy for the year. As usual, we're going to take 2 weeks off over the holiday break, and we'll join you again in January. We will be back on Monday, January 9th, and we'll continue our regular show after that time. In the meantime, I want to thank those of you who have made Talk Nerdy possible throughout the year. Remember, there are a lot of ways you can support the show. You can find them all at carasantamaria.com, including the Talk Nerdy store and different portals where you can pledge your support, one of which is the Patreon portal, which is where the majority of the listener support comes in. I want to thank all of my patrons throughout the year. So many of you made it so that I can continue producing this show all by myself and can continue to make it 100% free to download for anybody who wants to listen. The top supporters this week include Mark Hepburn, Phil T-Bear, Timothy Glover, Christian Jeffrey, David Lacer, Jeffrey Perez, Ron K. Noblock, Pedro M. Rosario Barbosa, Stuart Ogg, The Honorable Husband, Charles Payet, Jace, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Brian Holden, and Jeffrey Sewell. Thank you guys so much. Now, this week's episode is a special episode because it's an episode that has an important cause behind it. This week, I have the opportunity to chat with Dr. Jay Wenger, who leads the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation polio eradication effort within their global development program. He's an epidemiologist who formerly worked for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, who's also worked for the World Health Organization, and who has really dedicated a huge part of his life to surveilling and working towards the eradication of polio, both here in America and also in India. Now he's dedicating all of his time towards these efforts for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And one thing I want to mention before we jump into the episode, if you are interested in supporting, and I bet you will be by the time we end this episode, you can go to endpolio.org and make a donation. You can do it in your name or as a good holiday gift, you can do it in somebody else's name. Right now, the Gates Foundation actually has an ongoing partnership with Rotary International, and that's who you'd be donating to at npolio.org. The Gates Foundation will actually match every dollar given to Rotary 2-to-1, up to $35 million a year, which could go such a long way to these final few cases so that we can end polio once and for all. So I'll mention it later in the show, but go ahead and visit www.endpolio.org. Okay, guys, without any further ado, here he is, Dr. Jay Wenger. Jay, thank you so much for joining me today to talk polio eradication.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so before we dive right in, I would love for the listeners to get a good understanding of exactly what it is that you do.
Yeah, so I'm the director of the polio eradication group at the Gates Foundation. And I'm an epidemiologist, so I was trained originally as an infectious disease guy, internal medicine board certified. But I went into epidemiology, which is I went to work at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control for, about 25 years. And there I got involved in infectious diseases and monitoring how they spread in populations, and also assessing who was at risk for those diseases, and then ultimately trying to figure out how to stop them. And that got me involved in a lot of vaccine work. So I started with working on some vaccines for bacterial diseases, and then ended up working on polio in India for a number of years. And now I'm back here in the United States working on polio eradication for the Gates Foundation.
What is it about polio that captured your attention and made you want to dedicate a lot of efforts to it?
Yeah, well, as I said, I was working on some other infectious diseases and the vaccine impact on those infectious diseases. And I had the opportunity to see the power of vaccines in a population. I started working in the United States on a vaccine for something called Haemophilus influenza type B meningitis. And there was a new vaccine out called the Hib vaccine. And that got introduced while I started to work at the CDC. And I was able to, I was put in charge of the group that monitored how much of that disease there actually was and how effective the vaccines were. And I saw over a period of a couple of years that the disease went from thousands and thousands of cases a year of a disease that could kill and cripple kids to almost zero. And that was great. Mm-hmm. And I think that possibility that you can have a disease, a bad thing happening in a population, and then you can take a tool and use that in a way to actually get rid of the disease or effectively get rid of the disease. It got me interested in seeing if I could do that again. And I think polio is sort of a classic example of a disease that you can actually get rid of it. And that doesn't mean just, you know, give enough kids a vaccine and the disease goes down to some low level, but it's technically possible to make the virus extinct so no one will ever get polio again. And I think that's what I found really appealing about the polio eradication program.
And is that because polio doesn't have any animal reservoirs? It's not a zoonotic infection. So unlike Ebola, where it's going to kind of go back into the jungle and keep popping up throughout the span of existence because it may live in bats or it may live in some sort of other vessel, polio only exists in human beings?
That's right. So polio, yeah, not every disease is eradicatable. And polio is caused by a virus. And the virus, there are three types of virus, types 1, 2, and 3, but they live only in humans, and they can only reproduce actually in the human stomach or gastrointestinal tract. So what happens in a normal population without any vaccine, and this is the way it was in the world for thousands and thousands of years, was that a kid would swallow some water that was contaminated with the virus would go into their stomach, the virus would replicate down there, and make more viruses, and then the kid would poop it out into the water, and then another kid down the road would, you know, ingest that water and then get infected, and the virus would just keep on going around like that. And it was primarily in the toughest populations where there isn't good sanitation, it would spread that way. It was a disease that, you know, until relatively recently was a very common occurrence. In the United States, in the early part of this century and leading up to the mid-50s, we had thousands and thousands of cases a year of kids and young adults and even adults who got paralyzed in one way, shape, or form from the polio virus. And it sort of reached, it became epidemic after a little while and reached peaks where tens of thousands of people and kids were getting paralyzed each year. It was during that time that people started working on a vaccine for the virus and the polio, and the drive to get something to do about it was really intense. Back in the 40s and 50s, when there were outbreaks of this disease, there were times in the summer and fall, especially when swimming places would be banned and moms and dads would be worried about sending their kids to movie theaters because they were afraid they were going to get polio. So at one point in this country, it was a huge, huge public health problem. But in the 50s, the first polio vaccines became available and they were used. And over the next couple of years, the number of cases in the United States plummeted to near zero and ultimately did go to zero. And the virus was eliminated from the country. So that episode of big epidemics that people were terrified about to the point of actually having a disease that now at this point people don't even know that it exists anymore. That was a huge success for vaccines and public health at the time.
And obviously the goal now is to fully eradicate, not just continue to keep it out of America, but obviously to ensure that no child will ever again get polio. But before we jump into those eradication efforts, I thought it would be good to discuss briefly what polio is and what it does to a person if they contract the virus. I think when we think about polio here in the States, we think about FDR or we think about iron lungs, and it definitely sounds antiquated to us. I'm not sure a lot of people even think about polio, and if they do, is there a good understanding of exactly how dire the consequences of polio are?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I think in the olden days there were. Now, I don't know what people know, but it's in the beginning, before there were vaccines, it's likely that every person in the world actually got the polio virus and had it reproduce in their stomach and pooped it out for a while. But in the normal... for most people, what that meant was they'd swallow the virus, it would roll around their stomach for a little while, they wouldn't even have any symptoms, they wouldn't feel sick at all with anything. And then after 4 to 8 weeks, their body's immune system would get rid of the virus, and that would be it for them. And then they would have developed antibodies in that time and wouldn't be at risk of getting infected. But in a small proportion of people, and this is what one thing that makes polio a little tricky to get rid of, because we say that the case to infection ratio is actually pretty small. So for every 100 or 200 people who actually swallow the virus, and remember that was everybody in the world, only one or two develop paralysis. And we don't know exactly why some people develop paralysis and other people don't develop paralysis, but 1 or 2% of people who get infected with the virus can go on to get paralyzed. And that paralysis is unfortunately usually permanent. And the most common scenario is for a kid or somebody to develop a weak arm or leg and then develop total paralysis of that limb. So you would see sometimes it would occur in two legs or two arms or something like that, or every limb. So you could see a range of illness from that, ranging from a limp. You might be left with limp to somebody who is wheelchair bound for the rest of their lives. The probably the worst kind of clinical polio paralysis to get is when it affects your muscles that drive your breathing, and that's where you mentioned already the iron lung thing. And obviously, you need muscles to breathe. If those muscles go out on you, you can't breathe, and if you can't breathe, you die pretty soon. So in the olden days, before there were even iron lungs, a certain percentage of people who got polio died. later, during the period of iron lungs, and in developed countries at least, you could keep those people alive. And sometimes they would get a little better enough to sort of get off the iron lung. But a lot of times they'd be stuck on artificial respiratory devices for a long time. In the developing world, of course, where you don't have that kind of supportive therapy, kids who develop respiratory paralysis still die. So to summarize all that, polio can look like everything from a totally normal kid to a person who dies of respiratory paralysis. But the classic thing that you would see with a person who, quote, had polio before was to have somebody who had a permanent limp or a permanent useless arm that basically will not get better no matter what you do for it.
So thinking about the listeners of this podcast, the vast majority of them live in America, Canada, Australia, England, what we think of as kind of Western developed countries. So the majority of people listening right now have probably never experienced or encountered polio, but they may have had individuals in their family lineage who had polio. There may be personal stories, but probably there was no direct interaction. Now we know that polio has been eliminated from all but three countries in the world, Nigeria, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Can you explain kind of the difference between elimination and eradication?
Yeah, I could just go back one second on something you said there. Yeah, I think certainly most people in the developing world, developed world today, have not seen an active case of polio. But polio, the first polio vaccines came into use in 1955. And so people born before 1955 were around when polio was around. So you do see some people who have sort of the effects of polio, but they're mostly in countries like Canada and the United States. They're mostly people who are older. I actually was born in 1955, the same year that the polio vaccine was introduced. And I'm pretty old. So I most of these people who you see who know polio, and I do run into a fair number of people who said, yes, my brother had this, or my uncle had this, and I can remember what it was like. And some people can remember, but they're mostly on the older side of people.
Yeah, that's true. I guess my mother was born in the 40s, and so she probably, you know, was around it. She probably had people that she knew close that suffered from it. But nobody who was probably born after, you know, 1955 had, or I should say maybe 60 or 70, have really had a lot of direct relationship with it, and probably have never seen somebody in an iron lung except in, you know, film footage. So it does feel very disconnected.
Yeah, that's right. So it's hard to feel connected with it. I think the problem is now that, as you mentioned, the polio virus has been driven to a very small number of countries. But the tricky part about polio is that it is a virus. And so as long as it's in somebody's stomach, they could just get on a plane and go somewhere. And if they excrete in another country and it gets in the water and there's a kid or a small group of people there who haven't been vaccinated, who are not immune, they could easily pick that up again. So we've seen in the last 10 or 20 years a number of episodes where countries that have gotten rid of the polio virus have seen it reintroduced from some of these places where it's still propagating. And so that's one reason for a global eradication program. If we can get rid of it everywhere, then there's nowhere for it to come back from. And that's one thing that we can say to people in Canada or the United States and other places that's good. The other big deal, I think, with polio eradication is that as you mentioned, those countries you mentioned are all pretty wealthy, developed countries where kids get the vaccines they're supposed to get and there's good medical care and all that kind of stuff. But most of the polio remaining is in poorer countries, in developing countries, where kids don't get the benefit of all the vaccines and all the medical care that we have here. And the polio eradication program will make it possible to ensure that even kids living out there will never get paralyzed by polio. And I think that's the other huge, huge benefit of an actual eradication program.
Sure. And so when we think about the efforts that are underway with this global eradication initiative, it's really about getting the vaccines to these people when they're very, very young and ensuring that they never have the chance to catch the virus. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I should say a little bit about that whole operation. As I said, the vaccine was introduced in the 50s in a lot of developed countries. And after that, people noticed that if you use the vaccine the right way, if you gave every kid in an area, especially the oral polio vaccine that we call OPV, you could make that population immune, and eventually the virus would die out. So it wouldn't find any more kids in that area to infect, and then it would go away, and then no kid in that area would get paralyzed from polio at all, whether they were vaccinated or not. So that was great.
Mm-hmm.
People noticed that that happened in the United States, and then they noticed that it happened in a lot of Western Europe, and then pretty innovative work was done in a number of Latin American countries by PAHO and some of the early partners in this, including Rotary and WHO and UNICEF and the U.S. CDC. And they noticed that even in the more developing world, if you gave the vaccine the right way, if you vaccinated enough kids with these two drops of oral polio vaccine, you could actually get rid of the virus in those countries too. And it was after that experience in 1988 that the World Health Assembly voted to eradicate polio in the world. And every minister of health in the world signed on to that document, and that was the birth of the Global Polio Eradication Initiative. The main operating themes of that program were to make sure that kids get the routine vaccines that they're supposed to get. Just every kid has a set of vaccines to get when they're a couple months old, and that try to distribute that globally. To make sure that we had surveillance going on globally, to make sure we knew where the polio virus was, and then to run campaigns in places where routine immunization wasn't complete or where the virus was still around. We found out that doing mass campaigns where you organize groups of vaccinators to go to every house in a village, every house in the state, every house in the country, to do that over a period of a day or a couple days, if you spread the vaccine like that, you could actually get the virus to die off. And so that big operation started in many, many countries. And over the years, we saw the number of infected countries drop from 125 in 1988 to, we're down to 3 today. And so that's been a huge amount of progress. Whole continents have been declared polio-free since then. And we've driven it now to a couple of areas where we're still pushing to make sure that every kid gets vaccinated. But the trick is, in those areas, we need to make sure that we get the vaccine out. And there are lots of challenges and lots of obstacles that can sort of get in the way of that.
Sure. I mean, am I reading this correctly that around 1988, when this big partnership, like you mentioned, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, which involved the World Health Organization, UNICEF, the CDC, Rotary International, and of course, the Gates Foundation joined later. Am I reading this correctly that there were around 350,000 global cases when it started? And like you said, 125 countries, and now we're down this year to a measurement of only 34 cases.
Yeah, that's right. So the number of cases had dropped by lots of orders of magnitude, as we would say. And so it's gone to the point of almost disappearance in even in the countries where it still is. It's a very rare occurrence.
The problem is it only takes one person, and we could see a resurgence of hundreds of thousands. They go to a very populated area and spread the virus quickly.
That's right. And of course, even today, even though, we haven't had a case of wild poliovirus disease in decades in the United States, every kid in the United States, the recommended vaccination program in the U.S. includes a polio vaccine. So in places where there's good immunization coverage, most kids are protected anyway, even though they're living in countries which don't have the disease. But it's in places where healthcare systems are not very good, or where countries are sort of shattered by war or some other kind of disturbance that we have a real threat of having the disease pop out if we don't get rid of it.
And there is some nuance to how we take the vaccine as well, right? You know, currently you said most children, even in developed nations, get the oral polio vaccine as a part of their full kind of vaccine regimen when they're quite young. But once a virus is fully eradicated, if it's an eradicatable virus, it's maybe even, or can be, depending on the type of vaccine, a bit unsafe to continue to vaccinate. I'm reading here that type 2 and type 3 versions of polio within the vaccine, actually we think of as eradicated, or one of them is well on its way to eradicated. So there's only one strain that still exists. And once type 2 was certified eradicated, there was a huge move to remove it from the vaccine.
Yeah, that's right. So it gets a little bit complicated here, but there are two main kinds of polio vaccines. There's something called an inactivated polio vaccine, or IPV, and that's a killed vaccine. So you have to grow polio in the lab, but then you kill it, and then you give it as an injection, and no one can ever get infected from that vaccine. The oral polio vaccine, or OPV, is the other kind of polio vaccine, and that one is a lot cheaper, and it's also actually better for getting rid of transmission, because it makes your stomach, it doesn't just protect you from paralysis, which is what the IPV does, but it also makes your stomach immune to the virus, so you can't transmit it anymore. Mm. So the oral polio vaccine is the one that has been the workhorse of the polio eradication program so far. The clinker with the oral polio vaccine is that it's made of a weakened live virus, so that it can occasionally actually sort of mutate a little bit and cause polio, although not in as mm-hmm. great degree as wild poliovirus. So ultimately, the plan for the global polio eradication program is to use the oral vaccine until we get rid of the wild polioviruses, and then we turn off the oral vaccine in the world. And just go on and use the IPV, the injectable inactivated vaccine, as sort of an insurance policy for a number of years to make sure that everything is actually gone. So that's the plan. But you're right. As we noted in the very beginning, there are three types of polio virus in the world. There were three types of polio virus in the world back before there was a vaccine, types 1, 2, and 3. The surveillance project programs that we're doing show that we haven't identified a wild type 2 vaccine since 1999, and we haven't seen a wild type 3 vaccine for 4 years. So we think that those two viruses are actually gone, and we're down to getting rid of one. So we've already turned off just this year the over 150 countries who were still using oral polio vaccine with a type 2 component all switched to use now a vaccine that only has types 3 and 1. So we're already starting that process of stopping the oral vaccine in sort of a major global movement to get there. But that is part of the whole polio eradication program, where eventually we want to end up with a world that has no polio of any sort floating around.
It really shows science at work. It does seem like there are, you know, very important protocols in place between talking about something being eliminated and talking about it being fully eradicated. It looks like there's, a 5 to 6 year window where you have to have no new wild type cases before you can fully claim that something is eradicated.
Yeah, it's actually a 3 year window, but the deal there is the way we find polio cases. As I said, most people who actually mm-hmm. contract the poliovirus actually don't get sick. But what we do is run a global program looking for, it's called acute flaccid paralysis, or AFP. So we look for AFP cases, which just is a fancy way of saying it's a paralysis that leaves you limp and attacks very suddenly. So when a child or a mom or a dad notices that their child suddenly develops like a limp foot or can't move their arm right, they usually go somewhere. They usually go to a doctor or a faith healer or a temple or a something, because to try to get them mm-hmm. help. The way that the polio surveillance program works in developing countries is that polio surveillance officers have identified those types of places. They've identified doctors, hospitals, temples, any place that might see a paralyzed kid in their culture, any place a mom might take their paralyzed kid. And they notify them that if these places see a paralyzed kid, they should call the healthcare worker, and the healthcare worker will go make sure that a stool sample is taken. The stool sample then gets sent up the line to a laboratory, and there are a couple of regional laboratories in the world that do this quite easily, where the stool is cultured, and if poliovirus is grown, then that is called a polio case. What we also do is for every poliovirus that actually is grown, we subject it to further genetic analysis. So we sequence the virus, and that way we can tell from the past viruses that have been sequenced in the world, we can tell where that's related. So we can see essentially where that virus's close relatives are, and we can see if a virus turns up in, you know, Chad or something, we can say, where was the last most recently related virus to that? And we say, oh, that one came from Nigeria, or look at this one. This popped up in X country, but it actually came from Y. So we're actually to the point now where every poliovirus that we identify, we track it back to see where it came from. And then we use that information to try to figure out what population, how that could have happened. You know, are there population movements between X and Y? And are we making sure that we've got all those people vaccinated? Or are we missing them? Or is it a tricky area? Anyway, we're using that laboratory data on all these cases and that surveillance data to drive the final part of this program to the end and make sure we actually crush the virus wherever it is.
Yeah, you know, it's almost a little bit ironic that because polio is so sequestered now, because we have it down to so few cases, those individuals, which are, you know, admittedly in developing nations where healthcare is not up to the same level as it is in these developed nations, the specific individuals that have contracted polio are getting some of the most state-of-the-art, the most advanced medical and epidemiological effort put towards them. And obviously that's because the goal is zero. The goal is 0% transmission, zero cases across the world. When we think about the three countries where polio still exists, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Nigeria, and of course Nigeria was kind of a more recent flare-up, which I know was very disappointing for a lot of people, and sort of a cautionary tale. Is there anything specific about these countries that kind of tell you your efforts are going to have to be more intense? I mean, especially following the fact that polio is eradicated, or I should say eliminated, from India, from Southeast Asia, from many countries where there were a lot of real challenges and barriers.
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's sort of where we are at this stage of the program, trying to get to those last places. And it is a characteristic about eradicating a disease. If you're talking about eradication, you can't just fix it in New York and London and Johannesburg or something, in places that you can get to. You have to fix it everywhere, and you have to make the population of every place immune enough to have the virus die out. So that leaves us with some touchy places. And in the eradication business, at least in the polio experience, it's been, you know, the last mile is really has turned out to be the toughest. So these places, the program is sort of looking at and seeing, you know, what is it that characterizes these last couple places that we have disease? And the bottom line is it's the places where kids aren't getting vaccinated. So there are a number of reasons why kids might not be getting vaccinated. It might just be that in country X, the government just didn't pay enough attention to immunization and doesn't have a very good vaccination program that doesn't reach everybody or misses some people. Another thing that might be relevant is whether there is insecurity or problems with war. I think that the polio program over the decades that's been operating has faced a lot of very tricky situations. Even when it was starting out in Latin America, there were some classic operations to vaccinate kids, even in the middle of civil wars, where they where they established, they talked to both sides in the Civil War and established days of tranquility where both sides called a truce, and they used that time period of a couple of days to go out and vaccinate kids on both sides.
Wow.
That was one of the first approaches to this, trying to accomplish essentially a global goal in spite of local tensions. It's complicated now too. We had a virus that popped into Somalia after Somalia had been polio free for a number of years, and same thing in Syria. Even with the civil war there, there was an episode a couple of years ago where virus went in there and it was caught by a surveillance system which was still working in spite of all the turmoil, and it was possible through various ways to get vaccine to kids on any side of the conflict. And so how those things are accomplished and how the program adapts to that is really almost country specific, but there's usually a way to vaccinate kids. And a lot of times it hangs on an issue that no matter who you are, you normally want to do things to protect your kids from bad diseases. And using that as one of the approaches to get people on board has been important, but it's complicated. And I think that where the program is now in the final stages has reached a level where we've been able to assess where we think the highest risk populations are and then be able to hopefully anticipate that and be able to get in there and vaccinate people and kids before it gets good toehold and gets stuck.
You know, we're at this stage in the effort, and I'm saying we as if I've done anything here, but obviously the amazing work done by all of these organizations, including the Gates Foundation, and you, of course, as a key member of that team, you're at a stage where the fight is not over. It may seem like, you know, you're in the final stages. It's just the last few cases. It's almost done. But is it not true that this is kind of the most important time and the time when you need as much support as possible?
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, this is the end. And ironically, as you get to smaller and smaller number of cases, the immediate thought is, oh, we hardly have any polio anymore. Why are we spending all this money to get rid of it? But this is actually the crucial part of it, because if we don't get rid of it everywhere, we will suffer this rebound effect. And then we'll lose our gains and we won't have won. Mm-hmm. So that's a big issue. So yeah, now is a very crucial time. And, you know, I think that now is the time when we really need buy-in from partners and continued work of the vaccinators. I mean, the real heroes of the polio program are the teams of vaccinators who are just normal moms and dads who get trained to put two drops of vaccine in kids' mouths and go house to house in their neighborhoods and do that. And those are the people who ultimately who need the support to finish the job. And so we're pushing to see how we can facilitate that and how we can help that as much as possible.
Well, and the really cool thing here is that, you know, you may be listening to this podcast and thinking, okay, great, I hope my government's doing enough. I hope that we haven't forgotten, or I hope that more big corporations or more big foundations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are going to put money up. But the truth of the matter is there's something that you as an individual can do. You can support effort as well. And there's actually an ongoing partnership right now with Rotary International where every dollar given to Rotary by an individual will be matched 2-to-1 by the Gates Foundation, up to $35 million a year. So not only would your contribution go to directly help end polio in the world, your contribution will be doubled if you go to endpolio.org and make that contribution. I think it's important that people know that they, at an individual level, can do their part to help. Have you seen that there's been a lot of really cool kind of grassroots support?
Yeah, I think, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think, you know, the Rotary in general has been great at this and providing support both of the ways you mentioned, both by encouraging countries and governments to get behind this, but also to running a real grassroots fundraising operation. And as you said, they've worked with us so that now the foundation is matching every dollar donated through Rotary with a 2-to-1 match. And we love doing that, actually. So we would encourage people, if they want to support this effort and see this, be a part of seeing it through to the end, that they please do that. And it is www.npolio.org.
Yeah, guys, now is the time. It's that final push. It's the most important time, and it's the holidays. And I know that a lot of people around the holidays like to give in unique ways, and what a great way to give, to be able to do a contribution in the name of somebody that you love. So that's definitely an option, and I urge each of you who care about eliminating this horrible disease fully from the globe so that it never comes back. This can be eradicated. It almost is eradicated, and we just need one more push. So those of you who are interested, I urge you to give npolio.org. Dr. Wenger, I thank you so much for joining me today. This was just a really informative and, I think, exciting talk. It really got me motivated to do my part.
Great. Well, thanks very much. It was a pleasure.
Of course. And everybody listening, I am really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.